listening to The Finalysis with Travis Wingfield and Kevin Dern. Brought to you by WelcomeToPerfectville.com. Prepare to go deep.
What is up, Dolphins, and welcome back to another installment of The Finalysis Podcast. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and I'm joined by my co-host from the other side of the country over there in Cincinnati, Ohio, Kevin Dern. Kevin, what's happening tonight, man?
Oh, not too much, Trav. Just trying to recover from a late night out last night and ready to talk some football.
Kevin found himself at a concert last night, and you know, something that kind of irritates me about concerts, it seems like every time I want to go to a show, they always play like on a Tuesday night, and that's kind of what happened to you.
Yeah, it was. I went and took the lady to see the Lumineers. It was a late birthday present for her, kind of a makeup gift because her actual birthday was the day of that Dolphins-Jets game when I had food poisoning in December. So she really liked it, so I think I got back in her good graces for that one.
I remember that. That's pretty funny. And you know, my girlfriend, once the season ended, she kind of breathed a sigh of relief because it means I guess we get to spend more time together. And the other day I was kind of sitting there going over some of the stuff on the Fins and on Twitter and reading some of the draft stuff. And I was like, oh man, I'm so excited for free agency and the draft in March and April to get here. And she's like, I thought we were done with all this stuff. But nope, being a football fan, it's pretty much a year-round gig. I guess the summer months slowed down a little bit, but right now it's February, the Super Bowl's on Sunday, and the Senior Bowl just happened last Saturday, so plenty of stuff to get to today. This is going to be another draft-heavy episode. We're probably going to be more in the draft for the next month or so, I would say, Kevin, before free agency starts, and then March will really gear towards, you know, some of the signings and the players moving on and all that kind of stuff. So getting into the Senior Bowl later in this episode, but yeah, man, is there anything else you want to touch on before we get going here?
I'll just say this. The Lumineers are actually really, really good in concert. I was pretty impressed with them, especially the venue. They usually play some smaller, you know, venues, more intimate settings. And, you know, we played at U.S. Bank Arena last night. It's a pretty big place for a concert like that. They were really good live. I was impressed.
That makes it fun. Yeah, good live shows. There's not much better than that. I always compare it to, like, you know, going to a sporting event, because if you go to a sporting event, your team can lose and you can have a bad night. But when you see one of your favorite bands play, I don't know if they're your favorite, but when you see a good band play, it's you can't have a bad time. So you get the beer going and the good music. It's a fun time. So I'm with you on that. But there was some Dolphins news. I guess if you want to call it that, it's kind of just been like a delayed piece of information. But Kevin, you want to go ahead and update us on that?
Yeah, so I think it was late last week, Ian Rappaport off NFL Network kind of tweeted out that Ryan Tannehill's knee won't require surgery. And you and I had kind of speculated about that because of that poster, you know, from Reddit saying he played basketball with Tannehill. And we think that's actually true because the report says that Tannehill has been playing basketball. His knee's fine. He's going to Germany to get a Regeneron treatment. I don't know if I'm saying that right. But basically, it's the Germans doing German stuff and being smart about it. Kobe Bryant had it done back in the day. And it sounds like, you know, barring any kind of future injury, Tannehill's knee's going to be all right. They said he'd probably wear a brace moving forward, which, you know, a lot of quarterbacks would do that anyway. So positive news for Ryan Tannehill. And, you know, that's kind of exciting to me to know he's not going to need surgery and he'll be there for OTAs and mini camps and all that stuff in the offseason. But we've got some draft stuff to talk about. So, you know, Travis, do you just want to jump right into our Senior Bowl stuff?
Yeah, let's do it. And, you know, you mentioned to me before we got on the air here, and I kind of made it a point last week on the episode or on the podcast to say that I was pretty well plugged into the Senior Bowl, at least the practice portion of it. And, you know, I go back and forth tweeting with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks, and sometimes I get them to write back to me. But, you know, I had them all on DVR and I watched all I don't know if you want to call them episodes, but like they were hour long blocks and you had to record each of them in their own segment in order to, you know, play them back. And so I recorded back to back to back every single day, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then the game came around, and I live about 45 minutes outside of my hometown, which is where all my friends live. I moved here for a job and for a girl. And I go there quite often on the weekends, and I went down there, and my one buddy who's pretty into the draft, he invited me down. So let's watch the Senior Bowl. And then a couple of my other friends ended up coming over, and I had a good time with them. Don't get me wrong, but they don't care nearly as much as I do about this kind of stuff. And we had it on the game was on record as well on DVR. And my one friend who doesn't give a damn about college football or prospects or any of that kind of stuff, the play would end and he would hit the 30-second forward button on the DirecTV remote. So literally you had one shot to see what happened on the whole play. And I pretty much didn't watch the game. That was how I watched it. So I didn't get a lot of chance to scout the actual game, but the practice stuff, that's how I was like, all right, well, we're just going to call this good. And so we ended up putting on like the VR goggles and playing VR and that kind of stuff. So didn't really watch.
There's always that one friend in the bunch, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, I feel like I'm the one outlier because I'm the weirdo that wants to watch all this stuff. But yeah, I know you know how that goes. I mean, we host a podcast, so we definitely are a different breed in terms of those kind of people. But yeah, man, there were some guys that really stood out to me. I really pay attention to the positions of interest. I know you and I have agreed about this for a long time, at least since Thanksgiving, when we kind of identified this team's problems and what they needed to do moving forward to improve this team. So I kind of pay attention to the linebackers, the edge rushers, a little bit of tight ends and the interior offensive linemen, which, I mean, isn't that kind of the wheelhouse at this point? Isn't that what we're looking at, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, barring any kind of, you know, surprise offseason move that they make, you know, prior to free agency, I think those are the main spots we'll be looking at.
Yeah, and March will definitely shape the direction of the draft, I think, because I think that this team is close until they might start drafting for need in order just to get guys in the field. So, yeah, linebackers, you and I are going to go over kind of some of these things that are, we're going to have a draft game later on where Kevin and I are going to give you three names for each of the first three picks that the Dolphins could look at that could feasibly be there in that spot. I'm just going to be honest with you. Some of these guys are on that list that I have here, and two of them are linebackers that I fell in love with one, and the other I'm very intrigued by. And one of the guys, the one that I'm intrigued by, is a name that we had a visit for, and that was the linebacker from Florida, Anzalone. The guy that I think I got that right this time because of your Italian pronunciation for me. But man, Daniel Jeremiah talked about three things they look for in modern day linebackers, and it was, can he run, can he blitz, and can he cover? And those were three things that he was all over the place doing. He was, you know, his ability to get to the flats in either direction and from the offside linebacker position and cover, it was pretty impressive. And he made some stops on some stretch plays and that kind of thing. But the injury concerns me, especially with this team's health this last year. But he was awesome in the portions that I saw. And then Hassan Reddick, the linebacker from Temple. I know you and I had talked about him, and we were texting, and you told me he was an edge player at Temple, and I haven't watched any film on him. And I was like, he looks like a middle linebacker to me because he was doing the one-on-ones and coverage with the running backs, and then he played there in the game too. And I was like, that guy looks like he's been playing inside linebacker for 4 years at college because he was so polished looking, and he kind of runs downhill, and he finishes with his legs through the tackle, and he's explosive, and he can get across the formation. So excited to see him. I've been talking about Dan Feeney for a while, the guard from Indiana, like his game a lot. There's plenty of names I can go over here, Kevin, but what did you pick up from the game? Anything you noticed from the game that you really liked?
Anzalone made a nice flash play right from the beginning. I was pretty impressed with the linebackers as a whole, to be honest with you. You know, I didn't get a chance to see much of the practice. I think I saw like a portion of the North practice on Tuesday that week. And I've gone through and kind of watched the game kind of quickly twice now without taking any notes. But to me, I think, you know, and this will help out the Dolphins as well, the two areas that I thought were really impressive were the linebackers and the defensive ends in the game. You know, a lot of guys made some plays. You know, I heard Mike Mayock kind of say Hassan Reddick was the guy who made himself the most money this week. He was impressive in the game. Tyus Bowser from Houston made a nice play in the game as far as linebackers go. And I was kind of happy to see two of the defensive ends I've been talking about for a while. Tano Passanion, I think is how we're pronouncing it now, according to Mike Mayock, so who knows. But the passing game out of Villanova, I thought was pretty impressive in the game. And Terrell Basham out of Ohio, I thought was pretty impressive in the game, other than that one pitch-out play he got beat on. I think that was in the first quarter. But, I mean, at least those positions, you know, two positions of pretty big need for Miami, both kind of impressed, you know, me in the game. And, you know, Travis just not, for me not being able to watch a lot of the practice, I had a couple questions for you. And, you know, the first one, you mentioned Dan Feeney a minute ago, and that kind of leads me into the first one. You know, I think you talked about it a little last week about the O-line, D-line pit drill. I was kind of curious to see what your thoughts were. You know, maybe if you had a couple linemen, maybe a guard, a tackle, and a center on offense that impressed you, and then maybe one or two guys at D-end and D-tackle, you know, that impressed you in those one-on-one pit drills.
Yeah, definitely, and I'm glad you asked that, because in this, I almost sound like a homer when I say this, but there's a couple of guys the Dolphins have shown some interest in. But I thought the best center in the one-on-one drills was the LSU center, Ethan Posich, I think is how you say it. And these names are going to kill me by the end of this process.
Let's just call him the big dude from LSU.
Corn-fed boy that plays out in the South, exactly. So, yeah, he looked polished to me. You can tell he's got some experience under his belt, and he kind of knows how to handle things. And I think that
he looks really long.
Yeah, he does. And you look at some of his game tape, and it looks like he's kind of the one commanding the offensive line. So I liked seeing him from a leadership standpoint. And, you know, Mike Pouncey's a tricky situation there with the Dolphins. But if we go in that route, I think you got to get someone that can come in there and take over the line calls and that kind of stuff. So I think he fits that mold. I liked his game. We talked about Danny Isadora last week on the pod. And you mentioned he played a lot of right guard at Miami, and he did. And they had him at left guard even in the game, too. I don't know if you picked up on that, but it looked like...
Yeah, I didn't see him at left guard in the game, but I wasn't sure how much he played of that during the week in practice.
He was there all week, and that's why I was confused by it, because he looked like a guy that was learning a new position. I thought he had a kind of a rough week and kind of a rough game after that first day when he was really doing well in the pit drill. So he had an up-and-down week, but Dan Feeney showed me everything you want to see in a guard. I mean... We saw this team playing at its best under Pouncey when Pouncey was healthy, and we had like Laramie Tunsil. You know, obviously we know about his athleticism at guard. When those guys could get out in space and lead the way on the edges after the zone runs or the inside zone and outside zone, that kind of stuff for JHI. But Dan Feeney has all of that in his arsenal. I just wrote an article up on the Welcome to Perfectville blog portion, right, Travis Wright, about the offensive guards. Dan Feeney as well as Forrest Lamp for possibilities in the first round there, but really impressed by him. So. Those are the interior guys. I don't have a tackle for you, man. I think that the defensive ends dominated and outside linebackers dominated so much that these offensive linemen, the lack of depth in this draft is on the D end, and at tackle, it's not there. So I think that they really took a hit because they just, none of those guys could really hold up at that position. So
yeah, I was kind of underwhelmed by a lot of the tackles in the game too. You know, one of the guys I was looking forward to seeing was Taylor Moten out of Western Michigan, and just seeing him in the game, like Jordan Willis from Kansas State kind of had his way with him, beat him outside a couple times, converted speed to power a couple times. I think drew a holding penalty on him once. So, you know, I wonder if he's a guy that kind of slides into guard. And, but yeah, I agree as a whole, like none of the tackles really, you know, stood out to me during the actual game. Going back to the practices, I think the one portion I did get to see quite a bit of was the North team. Was some of the wide receiver versus DBD one-on-ones. You know, as a former defensive back myself, you know, back from my high school days, it's kind of tough in those situations because the quarterback knows what route's going to be run and the receiver knows where he's going and the DB has no help and doesn't know, you know, what the receiver's going to do. And I was really impressed kind of watching Jordan Lewis out of Michigan. He had a couple of nice battles against I think it was the Cooper Kupp kid from Eastern Washington.
But, yeah.
You know, Travis, did you have any favorites there in the wide receivers? You know, I know you love offense, so I figured you'd have some notes about those guys.
Yeah, I do. I want to touch on two more corners while we're at that position, though. I saw CK Parrothead, Chris Coffin on the Fins, wrote a big post about this guy, and so I paid a little more attention to him. But Arion Penton from Missouri had a great week. He had a drill. Or a play in the drill, in the red zone drill, where they're playing goal line, and kind of you have to defend against, you know, pylon and the inside slant. And they always say, you know, don't let him cross your face, don't let him beat you inside. So he was doing a good job of walling off the inside, and then he was quick to recover to the pylon and actually broke a pass up on I can't remember the receiver, but it was a really nice play from Penton, the Missouri corner. And then Rasul Douglas is a favorite of Daniel Jeremiah, and by association, a favorite of mine too, because he plays that length and that size on the perimeter. And I think that he has those long arms and kind of that physical. Brand of football on the edge there, but those are the two corners.
He's like 6'2" or something.
He's a real big dude. Yeah, he's got that Seattle Seahawks mold to him, the Richard Sherman and Byron, I guess ours now too, Byron Maxwell.
Yeah, I was going to say Miami Dolphins.
I guess they were the originators. We're the copycats, but we're trying to get there. Receivers, yeah, I think this is an easy one and kind of a cop-out, if you will, but I mean, the kid from East Carolina.
Zay Jones.
Yeah, Zay Jones in the game was awesome, and he did that in practice all week too. He caught everything, and he has that long stride, and he's able to get in and out of his breaks pretty quickly. I thought he was pretty impressive in those. And then the kid from I keep losing the name of his school, from what I think it was Western Kentucky, also Forrest Lamp's teammate, Taywan Taylor, looked impressive to me too. Now, you mentioned to me pre-show that you liked Chad Williams, the Grambling State kid, and he got himself into a little bit of mix-up. What did you like about Chad Williams in that game?
Just seeing him kind of running those routes, you know, I saw him catch a nice ball against Desmond King of Iowa early in the game. You know, Grambling, you don't, I mean, historically it is a football power, but it's not quite that, you know, Division I level that you'd like to see. But I thought he did a nice job of getting himself open, kind of plays with a little of that Jarvis Landry, like, feistiness. And, you know, I was kind of impressed by some of the routes he ran in the game. You know, he did a pretty nice quick hitch on King in that route. I was kind of more curious about what happened in the fight. Like, I heard Mike Mayock mention something during the broadcast that he got in a fight on Thursday. I was wondering if you had any more details on that.
I did. I saw it happen live, and I had to go back because the announcers kind of missed it at first. But I'm pretty sure it was a University of Miami helmet that was in the mix-up, and I want to say it was Corn Elder because I'm looking at the roster here. And I think there was another Miami kid at the...
They had a safety. Was it Williams, I think? Is his name?
Rayshon Jenkins?
Or Jenkins, yeah.
I think it was Jenkins that got in the mix-up with him. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. And those guys, Mayock made a comment about how dumb they are because they both threw punches at helmets. And it's like, I mean, yeah, what are you trying to accomplish by doing that? So I guess that can raise a character concern for you right off the bat. So I don't want to see that happening at all. So that fight was a little bit annoying. And then I believe you wanted me to touch on the quarterbacks a little bit.
I was kind of interested because, you know, in those bowl settings, it's kind of tough for the quarterbacks. And, you know, like I mentioned last week, the quarterbacks in the Shrine game that I'd watched too, you know, just were awful. I was a little bit impressed by Davis Webb in the game. You know, he won the MVP award for the game. But I was just curious, you know, like I knew he was there. Peterman kid from Pitt was there. Did any of them like stand out to you? Like I know a lot about Webb, but none of the other guys are really, you know, I haven't really looked into them much, so I was curious what your thoughts were on quarterbacks this week.
Yeah, I liked Peterman the best going into the week, and that didn't change. One of the guys that stood out to me a little bit, just because there was a couple plays where I saw him go through progressions and, you know, look off a safety, and I thought that was pretty impressive for a kid that came from Tiffin University and your stomping grounds over there in Ohio. Antonio Pipkin from Tiffin, he looks pretty polished for a kid that, you know, is playing in, I don't even know, is that FCS or Division II? I don't even know what that is. So he looked pretty good there.
Yeah.
Peterman looked the best in the game personally to me. And then Josh Dobbs, I don't see it with that kid. So was very turned off by his game. Sefo Lufau was pretty good in the Pac-12 until late in the year when he ran to the UW defense, the Washington Huskies, and he looked like garbage. And I thought that kind of carried over as well in this game. So not very much quality quarterback play to go around in this game. I think that kind of can affect the receivers too, because there's a pretty good list of receivers here that had a rough time. You mentioned Cooper Kupp. You know, that's a guy that catches everything, but I worry about his speed. He almost reminds me of a Brian Hartline in a way, with maybe a little bit more explosiveness. So those guys kind of suffered from the quarterback play again, just like the Shrine game, like you mentioned. So quarterback play, not great. Defensive ends dominated the game. Just the defense in general. Pass rush was phenomenal. Tackles, offensive tackles were pretty rough. The game was kind of a microcosm of the whole week, Kev. I mean, what you saw in practice is kind of what you saw in the game. I thought the tight ends also, if we can touch on these guys real quick. I mean, we mentioned the tight ends in the last episode, how they have Evan Ingram, Gerald Everett, and O.J. Howard. And Gerald Everett, I think, tried to give it a go, or maybe he was out there for a couple of snaps, but he wasn't healthy, so he didn't play. But O.J. Howard, I think, probably solidified himself in the top 20 of the draft, probably pushing himself out of the range for where we pick in the first round, I think. And then Evan Ingram, I've told you this a few times before, that I kind of wonder what Adam Gase wants to do at the tight end position because of what he's had in the past and the difference in guys he's had. And then you pull up Thomas Duarte, and I think Evan Ingram can be what Thomas Duarte, or what they had hoped Thomas Duarte could be. But I read that he was down to like 227 from 245 or something like that at the game. It's like, how did you lose 15 pounds or 20 pounds, whatever it was, in the span of, you know, from Thanksgiving till now? So I think he needs a bulk back up, and he could possibly be a Dolphin target later on as well.
Yeah, he certainly didn't look very, very big. I was impressed with O.J. Howard, at least his size. You know, he looks the part to me, and you know, I agree. I do kind of wonder, you know, with respect to the Dolphins, like, you look at Deion Sims, 6'4", 270. Marquise Gray, 6'4", 255. Dominique Jones was 6'3", 270. So you got three giant dudes. And then Thomas Duarte was 6'2", I think 235, 240, somewhere around there. It's almost like Jordan Reed-ish. Maybe that's what they're going for in terms of Evan Engram, but, you know, I don't know. What do you think about that? Like, the Dolphins didn't really seem to need that last year, not to get too off the Senior Bowl stuff, but...
No, I mean, anytime I can mix in Dolphins conversation, we are a Dolphins podcast after all, so I definitely appreciate that. But, yeah, it's puzzling to me, man. I think you're right. I think that Deion Sims and Marquise Gray are two guys that you could roll with as a 1 and 2 in this offense. I mean, you have three receivers that are, and I think even Mike Tannenbaum said this, they're starters. I mean, all three of those guys are going to play. We were one of the teams that had the fewest amount of reps in terms of the fourth and fifth receiver getting onto the field throughout the course of the whole season. So, you know, Stills, Landry, and Parker are going to be your guys out there, provided Stills comes back. So I think tight end with the running backs we have as well, like you had mentioned, and Sam Marcoux from the Perfect Field podcast, you know, piggybacked on this, saying that if you have the running backs that we have, like Drake and Williams, that can catch out of the backfield, you don't have to utilize that tight end position so much. So I can see why they would go away from that, but I can also see why they would just try to incorporate that and make the offense, you know, a bigger juggernaut than it already might be.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, too, about the receivers and the durability, because, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but just off the top of my head, I think Devontae Parker was the only one who missed a game, and I think he only missed the opener against Seattle, and otherwise... You know, all those guys were there for the other games, weren't they?
Yeah, I think Kenny Stills went out, I think it was before halftime, with a stomach issue or something like that. I want to say it was the Jets game, because wasn't it the Jets game that the Dolphins started off, I think, with a couple of touchdown drives in the first half, and then they went pretty silent in the second half. And I think you and I had talked about how that the offense looked a little bit different without Kenny Stills stretching the field. So, yeah, definitely a good point there. We probably should focus on maybe finding... Whether it's Leonte Carew, Jakeem Grant, or a new guy, I think that there's a fourth receiver opportunity out there for somebody. And I don't know if you want to do it very high in the draft, but one of the guys that I liked at the game was we talked about the two guys earlier. They're probably going to be higher picks, but Trayvon Doral from LSU looks pretty good to me. Not really sure where he'd fit in this offense, but someone to keep an eye on later on in the draft. Some of those smaller, quick twitch guys like Ryan Switzer from North Carolina, and Trent Taylor from La Tech, the little 5'8 kid that was out there, and he was abusing guys down in the red zone drills with the one-on-ones because they just couldn't match his quickness. He was winning with quickness, and that was pretty fun to watch. So I think that you probably shouldn't overlook any position in any year because you just never know what's going to happen. I mean, in terms of depth in the draft and depth on the roster, you can always overturn guys and find more talent. So definitely keep an eye on every position throughout the course of the process, because it's not going to be, you know, we're not just going to draft and sign guys at four positions. We're going to try to upgrade the entire roster. So that's kind of what we're going for here, is giving you guys a little bit of a taste of everyone that played in the Senior Bowl, every position, and a little bit of a wrap up on that. So I think I'm pretty much good on the Senior Bowl. Kev, you got anything else you want to jump in on here?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, a lot of the sites that I usually read up on, you know, about the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Game and all that stuff, I was kind of thinking we could do something real quick. They always seem to do like a post practice week and a post game, like stock up, stock down, and stock neutral. So I was going to see if you had any guys that you thought really, you know, kind of improved their stock, and maybe a couple guys that, you know, they are who you thought they were, and then maybe, you know, one or two that kind of dropped down in your eyes, because I wrote down a few names for myself, but I was curious what you thought.
I think the two guys we talked about off the top were the ones that I would say went up for me. And I know Anzalone has the injury problem, so that's probably still going to hold him back a little bit. But, man, I didn't know he had that type of explosiveness in his play, so that was fun to watch. And then Hassan Reddick is a given, I think. He's just
Anzalone's
awesome.
Anzalone's got some sweet hair, too.
He's got that Clay Matthews look, and so that's always fun to see. Stock even across the board. Can I say O.J. Howard just because he was as consistent as I thought he would be? I mean, I know he's
that's
a great player.
That's funny because we didn't talk about this at all. That's actually the number one guy I had on mind for that too.
That's awesome. So no preparation there. We agreed. Just, I mean, he to stay even with that kind of performance just tells you what we thought of the player to begin with. So he was awesome. And then stock down, it's got to be one of the offensive linemen for me. I think you mentioned, who was the tackle you had mentioned earlier in the show?
Taylor Oaken out of Western Michigan.
That's right.
Yeah, Western Michigan.
Yeah, he was rough. And then I was excited to see Antonio Garcia. The thing about this game is a lot of these guys come from smaller schools, and this is an opportunity to really show what they can do against, you know, higher level competition. And I thought Garcia got beat, you know, pretty often from some of the guys in the North squad. Terrell Basham had a good day, like you mentioned, and Dwayne Smoot there as well. So I think that the tackles and particularly Antonio Garcia from Troy. So that's my list for you. Let's see. Let's go Reddick, Howard, and Garcia.
Okay. So I just, you know, I'm not basing it off of practice, just the game, but I had a couple guys who, you know, I thought made themselves money, as Mike May likes to say. Hassan Reddick, obviously. I thought Tyus Bowser, the outside linebacker out of Houston, was up there. You know, Dan Feeney, you mentioned him. To me, I almost feel like, you know, he's not a Logan Mankins, but I feel like he can probably crack the first round, you know, sort of like Kevin Zeitler did with the Bengals a couple years back. Tano Passignon out of Villanova was impressive to me. Terrell Basham was impressive to me. My neutral guys were O.J. Howard. I already had him as my number one tight end, and with a first-round grade, he didn't disappoint. Evan Engram, you know, I kind of had him in that third, fourth round area. He might go a little higher. That's where I had him. Your boy Montrevious Adams I had down there. And then, you know, my stock down guys, I was kind of disappointed in Jeremy Sprinkle.
Yeah.
He was, you know, a tight end I was kind of looking forward to see. You know, he's had kind of a whirlwind offseason because I believe he got arrested for stealing something from the sponsor of Arkansas's bowl game. I can't quite remember what it was, but, you know, he had that. He just kind of looks, you know, he looks kind of like a B-list Deion Sims, just kind of big and slow. And then the one guy I was kind of surprised about, and, you know, I think this may not be his position in the NFL, but was Desmond King, the corner out of Iowa. You know, like I said, Chad Williams kind of beat him pretty good early in the game, and he just doesn't look like he had that foot speed, but I think he may be one of those guys where you take him and you move him to free safety or in, you know, kind of like a Charles Woodson type move. He may take off there as a safety, you know, just coming out of that scheme in Iowa. So those are my stock down guys. And then, you know, Travis, do you want to explain our little draft board game we cooked up?
Yeah. So we got about 20 minutes here before our guest comes on. We're looking forward to having a surprise guest for you guys. You might know him from a different episode or different podcast on Welcome to Perfectville.
It's not Dan Marino, just in case you were wondering.
It's not Dan Marino. It's not Brian Hartline, who I got into an exchange on Twitter with and invited him on the podcast after the set exchange was over, and he declined politely. So no Brian Hartline, no Dan Marino. It's going to be Sam Marcoux from the Welcome to Perfectville podcast with Chris Cullen. Those two guys put out an episode last week for the going over the Finns free agents, and I thought that was a pretty good episode they had there. So check those guys out. Check out the blogs on welcometoperfectville.com, the Right Travis Right tab, and the Ronan's Ramblings tab. Lots of draft stuff going for you guys there, so don't forget to check that out. You know, subscribe, rate, and review both podcasts. 5 stars, write us a nice little review. We got another very nice review over the last week or so, Kevin. I'm going to go ahead and read that on the air for us here from Slainer117. Not sure his Twitter handle. He follows me on Twitter, and we go back and forth sometimes, but I'm not sure his handle. I think it's Slainer.
Slainer something, yeah.
Yeah, it is Slainer something, so you can find him there. But his review was, Travis and Kevin bring us a much-needed podcast, one where they actually watch and break down the film, be it from specific games or individual players. Their analysis is generally very good, and they're incredibly knowledgeable. Let's face it, a lot of podcasts simply are opinionated banter, and that even goes beyond podcasting. That can be said for a lot of sports blogs and articles as well. It's refreshing to have this show up in my podcast feed because I can rely on actually getting educated about something I'm very passionate about, the Miami Dolphins. And then he comes back with a criticism, and Kevin, you're going to love this because he says, I have one criticism, and you and I dealt with this before we came on the air tonight. My one criticism is I hope in the future they get better recording equipment. Set up a donation line, guys. I'll gladly donate for the podcast. Keep it up. Before Kevin and I came on tonight, my internet's down right now at my house. I'm using a hotspot for my phone to make this happen. And then our sound kept getting blown out when I was talking into the mic, and I couldn't figure out why it wasn't working. So I had to reset the recording software that I have here. So with you, Slainer, we're trying to get that fixed or pounded out for you guys and get it sounding better for you. So I do apologize for that. But thanks for the nice review. You guys can go on iTunes or Stitcher, anywhere you listen to this podcast, and go ahead and give us a similar review if you would like to. Really helps us get out to more Dolphins fans and more listeners and really grow the podcast to become what it is. So no more shout-outs. Our guests will be on here in about 20 minutes or so, hopefully. But Kevin and I had a game we were going to play tonight. Maybe it's not a game. I don't know. Kevin gave me the idea. I loved it, so we're going to roll with it. We're going to go over a couple of names at the Dolphins' first three picks. And Kevin, help me out here. It's 22, 54, and what is a third-round pick?
So if the rumor holds true, we'll be getting the second compensatory pick awarded, which will be the 34th pick of round three for Olivier Vernon. And my math tells me that's pick number 98.
Do you know who the who got the first one there? I'm curious.
The site that I read said it's going to go to Denver because of Brock Osweiler's contract. And then Miami gets the second one for Olivier Vernon.
That's absurd. That's so crazy. Yeah. That's hilarious. I can't even get over that. So we're going to go back and go over those three picks and talk about some names that could be available and guys that we could target with those three picks. And Kevin, round one, pick 22, I'm going to let you lead it off here.
Yeah. Do we want to go with three names?
Yeah, give me three.
Okay. These are my three. So obviously this is dependent on what they do in free agency, so subject to change. But, you know, let's assume that the draft happens tomorrow. These are the three guys I would like to see most at pick 22. Jared Davis, the middle linebacker from Florida, is my number one guy on the board. I think he's going to merit heavy consideration. Number two is my boy, Vedante Taco Charlton out of Michigan, the defensive end. And number three, I'm actually going to give you a surpriser here. I mentioned him last week a little bit, but if Miami tries to get creative a little and try and find someone who can play both D-end and D-tackle, I'll give you Malik McDowell out of Michigan State. So those are my three. I had two runner-ups that I didn't make on the list. Those would be O.J. Howard and Dan Feeney. So my three were all on defense. Jared Davis, Taco Charlton, Malik McDowell.
I wish you hadn't given me the two additional names because now our lists are very similar. But my three names off the top, I think it goes without saying that I'm a big Jared Davis fan from Florida. I think he fits exactly what we need here at the mic position. So I'm with you on that all the way. He's my first name. And then I went on a rant and rave about Dan Feeney on my second article. And I tried to find a Boy Meets World clip today for a little sound drop from Eric Matthews yelling out Feeney, you know, when he does his little Feeney call.
Mr. Feeney.
Yeah, so I was hoping to get that, but I couldn't find one. And then, so Jared Davis, Dan Feeney, and then O.J. Howard, if he somehow finds his way there, I have a hard time passing on because I feel like he's going to come in and be a day one starter, and he's going to play at a plus level for you as a rookie. He's just so polished, both in blocking and the passing game, and he's just well-spoken. I really like the kid a lot, so those are my names.
So Travis, I gotta ask you here. I agree. I think Feeney is talented enough for a first-round pick, but I feel like we'd be doing a disservice. I have to ask you, can you, as a Dolphins fan, sell me on why we would take Dan Feeney, a guard, in the first round over someone on defense?
I'm going to try my best.
Your rationale for that.
I've been talking to you about this strategy for, I don't know, a few weeks now, and I guess this is a good way to put it on the podcast, but I just feel like you look at Atlanta right now, and the way the Falcons are beating teams is they've scored, I think it's eight consecutive games now, they've scored a touchdown on their first drive. And they put a lot of speed on that defense that was horrible last year. They upgraded some areas. They got the pass rush better. But the offense with all those weapons, I mean, they added Alex Mack to the middle of the line. Andy Levitre has been a good player for them this year in the interior. And then you have two backs with Freeman and Coleman that can beat you. And the receiving core that's kind of got different skill sets that you can attack different layers of the defense. I feel like if you just put together, rather than having some holes in offense and some holes on defense, I almost feel like it'd be a better idea to go with 11 solid offensive players, or I guess 12, 13, depending on your rotation with receivers and backs. You know, you get 12, 13 solid players on offense where you don't have any holes. You don't have any mistakes that are happening consistently throughout the game. You don't have drive killers like Dallas Thomas because, you know, as great as Jarvis Landry is and Jay Ajayi is and Ryan Tannehill can be, you know, you put Dallas Thomas out there, he can ruin the drive for you by giving up a sack and then blowing a running assignment or something like that. So you beef up the offense to a level to where it's, you know, unstoppable and you're scoring all the time and you're scoring quickly. Then you can kind of build a specialty defense because you can control the game with your offense. And then you build kind of a pass rush heavy defense with some speed and some takeaway ability. And then all of a sudden the offense has to play into your defense's strengths because they're playing from behind. So that's my sell point on Dan Feeney. If he's going to be a phenomenal right guard in the NFL, which I think he will, he plugs a huge hole and becomes, you know, a Pro Bowl level player at a spot that was previously a weakness. How's that for a sell job?
I like it. So so overall you would say, you know, and I agree with you on the concept of fixing the offense. Do you think it's, you know, from where I sit, I think the offense can be fixed more easily with fewer moves than the defense. I still think the defense will need, you know, at least this offseason, maybe another to kind of get to the level where I think it can go. So I like that explanation there. You know, what in particularly about Feeney himself do you like the most?
I like his athleticism. And he's a four-year starter there at Indiana. I think he had 40 career starts or something like that, high 30s at Indiana. So, or no, he missed a little bit of time with an injury last year, so I think he was down like in the mid-30s in starts. But anyway, besides the point, he's a tactician with great athleticism. I think you pair those two together, and you get a Mike Pouncey. I mean, Pouncey, we've seen how well Mike Pouncey can get out into the flat and you know, out in space and make some big blocks and swallow up linebackers. That article I posted on the Right Travis Right tab for the draft stuff, I put three GIFs on there. They're GIFs, not GIFs.
Yeah, we all saw the Twitter debate. The only GIF I know is a peanut butter.
Peanut butter. Exactly, perfect. So I put three...
No more comments for me on that topic.
Yeah, I agree. That's like religion and politics. Let's just move on. So
we've got some other peanut butter discussion planned for later, but we'll get to that.
There you go. So I put three moving images that repeat themselves on the article talking about Dan Feeney's ability to understand, you know, different type of blitz concepts. There was one where he chipped a center and then went off to the blitzing linebacker and just swallowed him up, no problem, stonewalled. The next play, he takes a screen, comes across the formation to the left side, and picks up another linebacker and eliminates him. I mean, and then there's another one where he gets out in space on a stretch play and takes out the man he's blocking there too. So he does everything, and he's awesome, both in study, preparation, technical skills, and his athleticism. So I think he's a first round surefire stud.
Okay, I'll buy that. That evidence holds up in the football court of law. So since I kicked off round one with pick 22. Why don't you kick us off with round two, pick 54? Who are your guys?
Awesome. I think this might be a stretch thinking this guy's going to make it there. Actually, two of these guys, I don't know if they'll make it there, but you had mentioned earlier about that, you know, Xavier Howard.
Before you start, make it there as in, like, you think they'll be gone before we get to pick 54?
Yeah, taken by someone else probably in the early second round. And that's why you had mentioned, you know, trading up for Xavier Howard last year. We talked about him in the Senior Bowl, Hassan Reddick. I think that he might even make his way into the first round now, but with the depth on the defense, we'll see how that shakes out. So Hassan Reddick is one. My boy Ryan Anderson, that he didn't flash in the game like I'd hoped he would. I think he'll struggle at the combine, and that'll push his value down a little bit. So I'm hoping he's there in the second round. So Ryan Anderson from Alabama, and then the boy from Villanova that we both have no idea how to pronounce. I think you're better at than I am, but the 6'7" giant wingspan pass rusher from Villanova,
Tano Passignon.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
My French that I remember.
I think we saw him talking, some people talking about him possibly having first round, you know, raw talent, but I just don't see him going that high because of the other more polished players of the position there. So if he makes it that far, it's not a bad spot to take a guy that he's not polished, he's not a project, he's somewhere in between. So I think that's a good spot for him there. So who are your three picks there in the second round?
Yeah, I'll just start. I really, really wanted to write down Passignon's name, A, just because I like to say it, and B, you know, I think he probably vaulted his draft stock up pretty high after that Senior Bowl game. I kind of see him as like the poor man's version of Ezekiel Ansah. You know, if you kind of remember, he came over from, I forget which African country, to BYU, but was basically like still learning football by the time he got drafted. Like, he was out there like slide tackling running backs, you know, if he couldn't get his hands on them. I think Passignon's not quite that raw, but that big jump from FCS to D1, I still think he may be gone before we get to 54. So I'm actually going to go with Deshaun Hall, the defensive end out of Texas A&M. By all accounts, I believe he had a pretty good week of practice, but did not play in the game. But he's got that length, that size that Miami covets. And if you watch, you know, any Miles Garrett tape, you kind of notice him flashing on the opposite side of the D-line as well. My second name for you is, I'll kind of give you the poor man's Dan Feeney, and that's Pat Elflein from Ohio State. I think he can kind of come in and play guard or center, and at worst case, you know, maybe he ends up as that guy who can play both as a backup. That way Miami doesn't have to rely on the combination of Anthony Steen and Craig Urbick. And while those two did yeoman's work last year, you know, you kind of want someone a little more solidified in the center. And by the way, I'll never hear the end of it if Miami's pick is Dan Feeney. My girlfriend Leslie went to IU, and she'll rub that in my face for a week or so. My last name, and this one I'm going to kind of jump out on a limb here. I do those fan speak mock drafts every once in a while, and I kind of use the fan speak mock, you know, rankings or whatever they have it to kind of show where the players stack up. And this is one guy who I've seen go anywhere in mock drafts from like the top 15 all the way down to the second round. I'm going to give you Quincy Wilson, the cornerback out of Florida.
I love that one.
To me, he kind of is like a Trumaine Johnson clone. I don't know if you guys know Trumaine. He's a corner for the LA Rams. You maybe last saw him when Devontae Parker caught that game winner against him in that game. But Quincy Wilson's one of those big, tall, I think he's 6'2", maybe even a little taller, 200-pound corners out of Florida. I think he's better than Jalen Tabor, just straight up. That's my take on it. But he definitely fits that mold that Miami was looking for, much like the Rasul Douglas kid that you were talking about earlier. So Quincy Wilson is my third guy there at pick 54.
I like that a lot. He's one of my favorite corners in this class. Him and Tre'Davious White, I think, are two of my favorite ones in the class. So if you can get him there, that'd be awesome value. Everyone kind of likes that tease Tabor from Florida. I find myself being more partial to Quincy Wilson too. So definitely like that name. Kevin, since I took the second round first, you want to go back and take the third round first?
Yeah. So, you know, so far we've kind of touched on linebacker and corner, maybe a little O-line. I'll stick with the offensive line. I kind of gave it a tie between two guys because I can't really separate them. But Danny Isadora and Dorian Johnson, those would be my two guards I would look at there. My defensive end, I have it at that third round pick, would be Terrell Basham out of Ohio. He played pretty well in the Senior Bowl, and, you know, he looked, you know, like he's built well enough and looks the part to play in the NFL. Maybe a little raw, but that's one of those guys that, you know, if Jim Washburn didn't retire, which sounds like he didn't at this point, even though Peter King says he was going to, Terrell Basham seems like one of those guys that Jim Washburn and Terrell Williams, our D-line coach, could really mold and fit into the wide nine. And then, you know, this was kind of a point that I got into, you know, a debate about on the Fins was, you know, Miami needs to be able to pressure guys, quarterbacks up the middle, namely Tom Brady. You know, Mike Tannenbaum echoed that at the Senior Bowl. Chris Greer echoed it at the Senior Bowl. I feel like Miami's going to go after either Calais Campbell or Nick Fairley in free agency. If that doesn't happen, Travis, I'm going to take one of your guys that you've been talking up and go with Montrevious Adams out of Auburn. You know, he's kind of that big barrel, you know, shaped guy, quick off the ball, you know, not a great run stuffer, but he's able to get penetration and provide pressure and collapse the pocket. So, I guess if I have to pick between one of the two guards, I think Danny Isadora is more likely to be there. So I'll go Danny Isadora, Terrell Basham, Montrevious Adams as my three guys for round three.
That sounds very good. I got to still, you know, I feel like you and I both kind of have some similar ideas about some of these players. So we are definitely going to be stealing some names. But my first player will be the guard Danny Isadora from Miami. And I mentioned with Feeney, you know, I like that durability. I like the fact that he played there for 4 years and played a, you know, he was always in the same position every game. You can count on him to be your right guard or, I guess, left guard in the Senior Bowl, depending on where you want to play him. But I think that right guard's a big hole for the Dolphins. Last year it was. I mean, Jermaine Bushrod gives you 16 games, but, I mean, how many of those games, maybe four or five of those games that we actually thought were pretty solid tape, if that. So I think the right guard position's a big one. So Danny Isadora is a big favorite of mine. In that third round, I think, is about where you start talking about him. I'm going to go with another defensive end that we talked about earlier, but you didn't. I thought you were going to mention him this round, but you didn't. Houston's Tyus Bowser. He had a pretty nice Senior Bowl week as well. I'm a big fan of those Houston kids. I think they, DJ Hayden a couple of years ago, and then last year it was William Jackson. I was a big fan of him. He got hurt for the Bengals before the season started, but I was a big fan of his coming out. So like that Houston pipeline of defensive players there, they play pretty well, and they play pretty fast too, so. Tyus Bowser, and then the last one was the, I think it was Youngstown State's Derek Rivers. Is that the right school? Am I right on that?
Mm-hmm. Yep, Youngstown State Penguins.
Yeah, you talked about that last ball. That's right. Yeah, he was awesome in the game too, and you see that red helmet with the white Y on it. You see him flashing, and he was getting to the edges pretty quickly, and he's got that pretty good football instincts too. So Derek Rivers is my third name for that round there. So that's my names, Isadora, Bowser, and Rivers for the third round.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with any of those names. Rivers is a guy I want to go back and kind of do a deeper dive onto if I can find any Penguin film to watch. So
Penguin film. You might have to go National Geographic for that or something.
Yeah. Or what's that movie, Happy Feet, with Morgan Freeman?
Morgan Freeman.
Maybe he's he's in there.
Solid name drop. All right, man. So that's about it for that portion of the podcast. I don't got anything else, Kevin. You want to get the last word tonight?
Yeah. So watching the Senior Bowl, you know, seeing those uniforms made me really want a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup, and I think it's for a variety of reasons. One, they were on the little number patches on the sleeves. Two, you know, it was kind of hard to differentiate because both teams were wearing orange and black. And three, you know, Travis, what's your favorite way to eat a Reese's?
The pieces of variety, the little candies, the hard candies. That's my favorite way to do it. But yeah, you're right, man. Those were so hideous, and I had a hard time kind of differentiating who was who on certain plays because the orange pants and the orange jerseys kind of meshed together a couple of times. So, and then the field logos were pretty big and bright, so that really, really blended in. I wasn't a fan.
Yeah, and then they had some little blonde chick handing out like 2-pound Reese's peanut butter cups on the sideline. So, I mean, you know, maybe we should go down there next year just to load up on some Halloween candy or something.
It's not a bad idea.
So I was just curious about that. Are we going to be able to get Sam on tonight?
He actually just Skyped me. I was going to put him on the end of the episode, but he just Skyped, and let's see if he can call in here real quick. See if he wants to take this with us right now. And joining us now on the podcast is none other than Sam Marcoux from the Welcome to Perfectville podcast. Sam, what's up, man?
Not a whole lot. I was supposed to be doing a show tonight, and the comedy club that I was working at, the staff walked out, so I'm obviously killing it in the comedy game, and I have a little bit of extra time, so here I am storming the Finalis' podcast castle. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good, man.
They walk out on the Godfather of Perfectville.
I was like, do you guys not know what's coming up here in the next week? One of the biggest episodes in the history of WelcomeToPerfectville.com between the Finalis' and Perfectville, and they didn't want to hear it. They just walked something about wanting to get paid. I don't know. It was weird.
Well, I think they got probably upset with you for coming in with your pants on, and I don't know that you have them on now. I know that's kind of your and Chris's thing. Kevin just revealed to me that he's not wearing pants, or maybe he is tonight for the first time.
That's
I can't remember what he said.
I am wearing pants during the podcast.
So pants are aplenty.
Did it feel weird? Like, was it uncomfortable for you to kind of go through the whole process of the podcast, and you know, you've kind of got this constriction going on in the lower half of your body?
Yeah, still uncomfortable.
Yeah.
All the way through.
I'll have to say.
I do my best work. The way it is. I mean, try it one day. Anybody out there, like, go and record yourself into your phone with your pants on, and then do the exact same thing with your pants off, and you will find that the second recording with your pants off is just better.
Now, the old adage is that if you picture the audience in their underwear, it helps you perform. So am I to understand that you go on stage without your pants on?
No, because I am a professional, so I will put pants on in the green room while I go on stage and do my stuff, and then afterwards, immediately off.
All for show. I like it. What a professional. And speaking of professionalism, Sam is putting together the award show that he mentioned earlier, the Finzies Awards, which will feature all four of your favorite podcasters when it comes to the Miami Dolphins. I hope that's not arrogant to say. Kevin, Sam, Chris, and I will be on the podcast doing the Finzies Awards, and we're going to get to recording that here pretty soon. I was hoping you could tell us a little bit more about that tonight, Sam.
Yeah, it's an award show we're putting together. Next question.
Next question.
No. the Finzies is the name that we came up with. I mean, obviously, if you guys are familiar with what we do here at WelcomeToPerfectville.com, between the blogs, between whatever this is that we're doing right now, the podcast, everything that we do, we have all kinds of thoughts, right? We have lighthearted thoughts. We have some serious analytical thoughts. We've got all these different things going on. So we thought, you know what? It's award season. We've got the Golden Globes. We've got the Academy Awards, we've got the SAG After Awards, we've got all these different awards that are out there. They don't mean anything. They don't mean anything to us. Like, our guys aren't getting awarded. And then you have the NFL Official Awards, which you know we're going to get screwed. Cameron Wake is not going to win Comeback Player of the Year. It's going to go to Jordy Nelson. Mm-hmm. You know that Adam Gase is not going to get Coach of the Year. It's probably going to go to the guy there with the Atlanta Falcons or possibly even the Dallas Cowboys coach, somebody like that. Maybe even Bill Belichick, right? So you have all these different guys. Our guys are going to get screwed, and I don't feel like we're accurately represented in the awards arena when it comes to this type of stuff. So we kind of put our heads together a little while back, all four of us, Kevin, Travis, myself, and Chris, and we came up with the concept of the Finzies. Now, this is based around the Miami Dolphins. It's based around WelcomeToPerfectville.com, and we have all kinds of different categories, 12 total, and some of them the actual listeners out there are going to get a chance to vote on. I'll be putting the actual categories up with write-ups here before too long. And a few of them will actually have a poll option where you can go in and vote for who you think should win the Finzi. And it's not a weighted average or anything. It's just majority rules. So if somebody gets the most votes, then you know what? They're going to be the winner of that specific Finzi award.
I like it. I like it. Sounds good, man. Sounds good. That's the godfather of the Perfectville website. That without Sam, there is no Perfectville. So, you know, without the 72 Dolphins, without Sam, we don't have this stuff. You don't have my writing. You don't have Kevin's beautiful voice over there and defensive coordinator of Perfectville. So thanks for coming on the podcast, man. Gracing us with your presence. It's pretty quite an honor to have you on.
Oh, stop it. No, you guys are doing a fantastic job. I enjoy listening to you guys all the time. And for everyone out there that's listening to this right now, if you have not given back to this podcast by rating them on iTunes or by commenting on, you know, the post that they put out there or just following them on Twitter, do so now, because they do so much more than just talk here for, you know, 30 to an hour and a half every week. They give you content on Twitter, they give you content on welcometoperfectville.com. I learn more about the Miami Dolphins from you two bozos than I do any of the beat writers or any of the press conferences or anything else. I mean, I look forward to it every single week. So thank you guys for everything you bring to the website. And we'll throw one of the categories out there right now, just so you guys know. If you don't listen to Perfectville, shame on you, because we're awesome too on that side. But one of the categories you will be able to vote on is the Dolly Parton Biggest Bust Finzi Award. And that has to go to the player that was basically the biggest bust for the Miami Dolphins this year. That could be somebody that we traded for, that could be somebody that we signed, or that could be somebody that we drafted that we had high hopes for. But at the end of the day, the only thing they filled was Dolly Parton's bra in terms of being the biggest bust. So we'll put that category up. There's going to be four nominees for that category. And you guys will have about a week to vote on who is going to take home the prestigious Dolly Parton Biggest Bust Award. And that'll be, I think next week, it's going to be a two-part episode. Next week, we'll have the first part, the first half of the Finzi. So stay tuned.
Awesome. Well, Sam, I got to jump in and we got to ask you. Before we called you on, Travis and I were just talking about the Senior Bowl and how the uniforms basically looked like Reese's Peanut Butter Cups with the orange and black. So
yeah.
Just chime in. What is your favorite way to eat a Reese's? We have to know.
Now, are you talking about the Reese's Pieces that look like made-up M&Ms, or are you talking about the actual peanut butter cups?
I'll leave it open, because Travis said his favorite were, in fact, the Reese's Pieces.
So I was not privy to the conversation prior to this right now, and I will say this. I had this argument with people recently, and I believe I am correct. And I believe what it is you take the Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, and you take your favorite flavor of ice cream, which is hopefully going to be chocolate, and you mix it in Cold Stone style, and you just put it all in there with ice cream and Reese's peanut butter chopped up, all that fun stuff, and you eat yourself a nice Reese's peanut butter cup chocolate ice cream sundae. That's the way I would prefer it.
Gotcha.
He's not wrong. He said he wasn't wrong, and he is right. That's absolutely correct. I can't beat that. Yeah. All right, Sam. Well,
that's if you have time. If you don't have time, if you're at a convenience store, you pick it up, you rip it open, you just throw it right in your mouth, and you move on with your life.
You mean,
either way, it's a Reese's peanut butter cup or Reese's Pieces. You can't go wrong.
You mean you can't do the Cold Stone Creamery on the dashboard in the vehicle?
Oh, that's a good idea. See, I told you guys. I learned here on the Finalysis more than I do on any other podcast or any other website. I'm going to try that. I'm going to do a little carbecue with the Reese's peanut butter. Absolutely.
See, Sam would not like my method. Maybe it's an Ohio thing, but I usually take them, put them in the freezer for 10 or 20 minutes, and then eat them later.
That's a good method, because it's nice. You see, I'm weird, though, because, Kevin, I like my peanut butter in the refrigerator, and I get so much crap for that, because people are like, that's so weird, it gets so hard. I'm like, no, it's so good. Yeah. Like, if you have, like, hard, cold peanut butter, there's nothing better in the world, and you got to learn how to work it and get it on a piece of bread, and it's an art. So, no, I applaud your efforts, too.
Yeah, and I'm saying Reese's peanut butter and the peanut butter cups, either of them,
yeah.
In the 10, 15 minutes, you're good to go.
Put it in there, man. Everything's better when it's cold, except for the beach.
Except for the beach.
And Miami Dolphins football.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a parallel there. I was going to go Ryan Tannehill knee injury or something, but I couldn't come up with one. But that is Sam Marcoux from Welcome to Perfectville podcast. Thanks for coming on tonight, Sam. And we got off the rails, and I couldn't be more excited about it. So the Finzi's Awards coming up here next week or for the next couple of weeks. Dolly Parton Award, all that good stuff. So we'll have that for you guys coming up soon. Don't forget to check out the podcast with Sam and Chris, the Perfect Field Podcast, and like he mentioned, the Right Travis Right and Ronan's Ramblings blog portions of the podcast or of the website as well. So thanks for tuning in tonight, guys, and that'll be it from the Finalysis Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Finalysis with Travis Wingfield and Kevin Dern. Subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, and go to welcometoperfectfield.com for the very best coverage of your Miami Dolphins. Fins up.